I'm delighted now to welcome back to the program Jeffrey Haas. He is a civil rights attorney, an author, and human rights advocate. And tomorrow night, he will be giving a talk along with Santa Fe and Becca Wolf. It's called Demographic Engineering, Israeli Displacement of Palestinians from East Jerusalem and the West Bank. And that's happening Saturday night at the Unitarian Church here in Santa Fe at 7 in the evening. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So you were just there. You were in Israel. You were in the occupied territories.
That's correct. My son Justin and I went, and we were there for about 2 weeks in July and August.
And what motivated you to go in the first place?
Well, I've been concerned about the treatment of the Palestinians, and also I'd never been to Israel or the West Bank. And so I thought I would go and take a look and see what I saw. So my
You've
son,
never been to Israel?
I'd never been to Israel, no.
So what did you see?
Well, what I saw was pretty distressful to me, pretty depressing. And I did focus a lot on how the Palestinians were treated. I spent substantial time in East Jerusalem, in some of the West Bank cities of Hebron and Bethlehem, and some of the West Bank communities like Beit Omar. I also visited many of the Israeli tourist sites. But what we saw is a very systematic way of displacing Palestinians from the land. And I'll begin with one of the first things we learned is about water. And, of course, water is critical. So we had a really interesting presentation, and then we saw how that played itself out. But one of the things, contrary to common belief, there's quite a lot of water in Israel and the occupied territories. Between rainfall, which is substantial other than the summer, and two large aquifers in the Jordan River, there's plenty of water to go around. The problem is about 88% of it is taken by the Israelis. The Jordan River is completely drained and used for the Israeli agricultural and other use. The aquifers under the West Bank, under the settlements in many cases, are taken by the settlements. So they have water for gardens, for fields, and for washing. And then there's an aquifer that runs along the Mediterranean coast, which ends up in Gaza, but most of the water is drained out before it actually gets to Gaza. So now the aquifer in Gaza, not only being contaminated by the bombing when Israel invaded, but it's being depleted and will likely collapse within about 5 years.
Now, what percentage of the area that we're talking about, Israel and the occupied territories, is made up of Palestinian people?
Well, it's less and less. What we saw was a very well-organized campaign to basically drive the Palestinians away from Jerusalem, away from East Jerusalem, away from most of the areas of the West Bank, and to contain them in about four or five cities of the West Bank.
So there's not fewer people. They're just being concentrated in a ever-shrinking area?
Pretty much. The Palestinian resistance, as they say, existence is resistance. And we asked one Palestinian, what's your desire? And he said, it's to die in my own house. So in spite of these incredible conditions, the Palestinians are trying to find ways to survive, supporting each other, building community organizations, and so forth. So yes, it's more and more Palestinians live in less land and in much worse conditions. We visited the village of Beit Omar, which is actually quite a prosperous village, not too far from Jerusalem. The people had very lush fields, grew plums and pears. And one farmer said, well, my annual income was about $40,000 a year. Then a large settlement of Indian Jews was put on part of their land.
From India.
Now, here was the Palestinian man telling me, that's the house where my father and grandfather were born. These people have been in this village for hundreds of years. And yet a group of Indian settlers came. Then they were supported by the IDF. Now they have a substantial settlement, and they're taking over more and more of the territory of Beit Omar, burning down olive trees, in some cases attacking the Palestinians, and basically Israeli settlers have immunity. If they attack Palestinians, they're never charged with a crime. So we see even what had been prosperous Palestinian villages shrinking in size, getting less and less water. And their crops, they can't get to the Jerusalem to sell them because of the checkpoints. So life is getting worse and worse for Palestinians, although they are surviving in numbers. the form of life that they're forced to live under is pretty terrible.
So, Jeff Haas, just looking at the numbers here, you do have a country, or, I mean, it is one state, it's Israel, which is, in terms of population, 50% Jewish, 50% Palestinian.
Right, pretty much. If you add up the Palestinians in Israel proper, in the West Bank, and in Gaza, their population is very close to the Jewish population of Israel.
But if you actually look at the map, it's a tiny percentage of Israel, which is now Palestinian territory, and ever shrinking.
Let me just explain how it's shrinking. Israel has done some things that are very clever. I would actually call them diabolical. The area of East Jerusalem, which is mainly Palestinian, has been declared open land or parkland. That means in order to add on to your house, you need a permit. But the permits are controlled by Israelis, by Jewish people of Israel. So a Palestinian in East Jerusalem can't get permission to add a room onto his house. If he or she does, then they are subject to, if he or she builds without an order or without a permit, they're subject to demolition. And as far as I know, Israel is the only country in the world that demolishes houses for building without a permit. And that might seem, well, what's so strange about that? Well, I lived in Chicago, and if you added a porch or a bathroom onto your house without a permit, they'd come and they'd fine you, and maybe they'd make you comply. They never tore your house down. But that's what they do to Palestinians who build without permits. And you can't build in East Jerusalem because you can't get a permit if you're a Palestinian. Similarly, 60% of the West Bank, what they call Area C, has been declared agricultural land. So if you're a Palestinian and you want to expand your village, you can't because you need a permit because it's agricultural land. But if you're a settlement, if you're a group of settlers who put a trailer or a group of houses there, you get permits to build. So basically, there's no law that says Palestinians can't add on. They're just the way the laws are enforced prevents Palestinians from building in East Jerusalem or in the most of the West Bank.
We're talking to Jeff Haas. So this is a situation that's been going on for a long time, year after year. We talk about it on this program. A lot of people around the world, I mean, there's tremendous international support for Palestinian people. Why does it just keep on going on as if no one were watching?
I think because the U.S. backs up Israel militarily, economically, and diplomatically. So that every time, I mean, you know, the U.N. has had a declaration about the West Bank and the occupied territories and a peace treaty for how many years, how many times has that been passed, and there's no enforcement of it. And any time another Israeli law gets enacted that's in violation of the UN treaty, the U.S. blocks any kind of UN action against it. So what's happened is that Israel has the money and the financial support of the U.S. and to some extent Europe against the Palestinians who don't have much support among the leaders in the Arab world. They have a lot of support among the people in the Arab world.
So you and your son were in Israel, Jewish people, visiting your brethren and visiting Palestinian people. Tell us about the person-to-person encounters that you had.
Well, the contrast is kind of amazing about how people are treated. We knew Becca Wolf, who's from Santa Fe and is married to a Palestinian man and lives in Beit Omar with him. He's a Palestinian man who lives in the West Bank. He cannot travel with us to Jerusalem. He cannot travel with us to the beach in Tel Aviv.
Even being married to an American.
Right. As a matter of fact, he can't get a visa to come to the United States to see their child, who's 2 years old. So that's the kind of unequal treatment. Palestinians are divided into four classes. There's the Gazans, who are basically in an outdoor prison, can't go anywhere. There's West Bank Palestinians that can only go to the West Bank but can't even travel freely between the cities because they're checkpoints and it's very difficult to get, say, from Ramallah to Hebron. There are East Jerusalem Palestinians who are subject to losing their citizenship all their time if they leave Jerusalem for a while or they're annexed by this wall that is cutting more and more Palestinians off from Jerusalem. And then you have Palestinians in Jerusalem that have some of the rights of Israeli citizens, although not as many rights.
And how does this play out in the days and the lives of people whom you met?
I think, give you an example, in Beit Omar, which is an agricultural village that relies on pears and plums and fruit trees and used to be quite prosperous. They're constantly on the edge about water, whether it's water for their fields or whether it's water to drink. And so they often have to buy water. If you notice, all the Palestinian homes have water tanks because they have to buy water, whereas in the settlements, water is plentiful and they have a lot of pressure and they have water 7 days a week. In Palestine, they might have it, or in the Palestinian villages, once or twice a week. If they grow things, they can't take their things to market. They can't get to Jerusalem where the main market is, because if you're a Palestinian, you can't, and you live in the West Bank, you can't go to Israel. So,
what about feeding each other? Can you get, in other words, can Palestinians feed other Palestinians with the food that they grow?
They can do that, and some, if you're willing to spend 2 or 3 hours and get through the checkpoints, you can actually trade food between some of the Palestinian villages. The problem is, as you said, the population has remained constant, but more and more of their territory has been taken away. In the example I gave, this Indian settlement has been, in some cases, they just cordon off the olive trees that they say are too close to their settlement for their own security. So they don't allow the Palestinians to go there. So I asked the Palestinians, do you ever apply? And they say, it's ours. We don't accept a process where we have to ask people to go to cultivate or harvest our own olive trees. So there's a pride among the Palestinians and a desire to stay and a desire to make their life as good as possible.
One of the things that is an ongoing conversation year after year is, what's the solution? Two-state solution, one-state solution. Is it possible to have a two-state solution when there's so little Palestinian land left?
If you look at land and you look at water, what's left for the Palestinians is not a viable state. It's a group of Bantustans or Cantons. Whatever you feel ideologically you think would be best, there's not enough left to have a Palestinian state. You'd have a group of villages and two or three cities connected by checkpoints, by walls, all kinds of things that wouldn't be viable at all. And East Jerusalem, which would be the capital, has pretty much been surrounded by settlements, and it's cut off from the West Bank. So I think people, not for ideological reasons, just say there's one country here, and Israel is going to have to choose between either an apartheid state in which half their population has no non-equal rights, or a democracy in which everyone in the state shares the rights.
And they don't want a democracy because what if they're outvoted?
That's the dilemma that they've pretty much put themselves in. They could be outvoted. And I think people like Ali Abanima, who seem way out there for a long time, he's proposing a single state, but with the cultural and religious rights of all groups protected. So, and the right to practice your religion, your culture, no one would deny anybody that. And I think if you look at it on the ground, that's the only thing that's possible. There is no Palestinian state left.
Is there an Israeli peace movement that is viable at this point? Did you meet with people?
There are certainly progressive Israelis. There are people who in the past have refused service in the Israeli Defense Force, particularly when they had to serve in the West Bank. There's organizations that support Palestinians. There's an organization that protests against housing demolitions and turns people out when there's a housing demolition order. And I think more recently there's been more civic organizing among the Palestinians. Becca Wolf is going to talk about a women's group, a group of women from leaders from the West Bank who've come together and are organizing women's resistance with the support of Israeli women. And so that's a new development. And then there are community organizations within the West Bank. For example, if somebody's olive trees gets cut down in Beit Omar, the community group group goes out and says, we'll build you a greenhouse and we'll help you grow vegetables where you used to, on the land that you still have left. Or in Silwan, which is a very crowded community in East Jerusalem, there's a community center. The Israelis just bulldozed the entire larger area, where which was a playing area, a play field, and now they set up, there's a room in one house that's a library, there's a room in another house which is a kitchen. They ran a camp for 300 kids moving from house to house because they can't build anything there. Going back to the water, a Palestinian cannot get the right to build a well. There's an Israeli-based group of engineers, of supporters of the Palestinian rights, a civic organization that has actually built solar panels and wind turbines in some of the areas of Bedouin villages, providing them with electricity since they're technically not allowed to build any structures. The Israeli army has come and destroyed these wind turbines and solar panels because they provide, they're a structure. And I think one of the most striking things is we were in a Bedouin village in which the people hardly had electricity. They couldn't build wells. And they're 15 feet from a new settlement that people had. You could look across this fence, and there were big trees, and there were gardens, and there was grass. And the palace and the Israelis inside lived a totally different life.
The people who live in settlements are acquainted face-to-face with the reality. The people who live in big cities may not have any idea what's going on, depending on how observant they are or how well the media is covering it. The people who live in settlements, I mean, do they just not care? Do they think these people are less than human? I mean, what's going on psychologically?
Well, there are settlements of different sizes, and there are settlers who are ideological settlers, who are religious settlers, or many just got a good housing deal from the government because they subsidize people who move into these settlements. Some of the large settlements of 50,000 people around Jerusalem, I don't think they think they live in a settlement. It may be 20 years old. There are no Palestinians around. They may not know that it's been built on Palestinian land. Then there are the settlers who go out and throw a trailer down right next to a Palestinian village and then ask for the IDF to come and protect them militarily. They're there for a reason, to encroach on that land, to take over the land. So I guess some people, it is easy if you're in a big settlement near Jerusalem, for example, of which there are many, to sort of ignore the fact that you're on Palestinian land and that you have a fountain in front of your settlement and they barely have enough water to drink. On the other hand, the newspaper Haaretz, which is widely circulated, gives pretty detailed accounts of the mistreatment of the Palestinians. So I'm kind of amazed when people say, I didn't know that was going on. They may not see it right around them, but if they wanted to find out, if they read it, you know, they'd have to know.
We're talking to Jeff Haas. So what, in your view, is Israel's long-term strategy? I mean, you have a country full of a close to equal number of Jews and Palestinians, and I mean, they're not going to go anywhere. So what are they thinking?
I think they can drive them out.
Where do they think they're going to go?
I don't know if they've thought that through. I just think they
hope
to. How
can they not have thought that through?
I think that they're marginalizing the Palestinians more and more. Whether they think some other country will accept them, whether they think they'll leave voluntarily, whether they think somehow they'll die off because they can't live without water. It's hard to imagine the long-term play, but it seems like Israel wants all of that land for itself. And the Palestinians that are left are going to live pretty much maybe the way blacks lived in South Africa, in Bantustans, in areas where they have no rights and they have no access to being self-sufficient. It seems to me that's the direction they're going in. We'll create Bantustans, and that's just the way it's going to be. And they can, we'll let Ramallah have free trade, and they'll have some middle class there, and we'll buy off the Palestinian leadership, which they've done quite successfully, and use them to control the population, and we'll let them be rich, and they'll control the Palestinians. That's been the strategy, and it's been totally backed by the U.S. If you read the WikiLeaks, the U.S. was urging the Palestinians to take almost nothing. No water, no real land, take anything Israel has to offer, and they probably would have been successful, except Israel wasn't willing to give up anything. So they really don't see, you know, anything for Palestinians except a few separated large cities that they allowed, you know, that they have some civilian control over.
Now, do you see any shift in American public opinion or on the level of American government? Or is it just business as usual? What do you see?
I see among young people, among educated, and among any kind of leftist or progressive people, more and more disenchantment with Israel and more realization of what their plans are.
Both Jewish and Gentile opinion.
And in particular Jewish, young Jewish people, I don't think they're not supporting Israel. They don't give unqualified support, and they hardly, you know, in many cases, they support Palestinian rights. So among young people, I see a change. Among churches who are now signing on to this boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign, I see a change. The area you don't see a change in is Congress. And Congress, as Jeff Halpert said, as Israel feels, as long as they have this congressional support in which Congress falls all over itself to show who's more pro-Israel, who will support with more weapons and more money Israel policies, as long as they try to outdo each other, then Israel feels secure, basically, in pretty much doing what they want.
Now, how do you feel about this as a Jewish person yourself? I mean, I look at the idea of Israel, and I think, what a lovely thing. I wish, why can't it live up to the beauty of its original ideal?
Well, I think there were two ideals. One certainly was legitimate, was protection for Jews who had been oppressed and prosecuted and murdered throughout Europe. The other was an idea of aggrandizement and of a chosen people that had the right to take over somebody else's land. And there are a lot of people think that that's really been the ideology that was there from the beginning, and some say that's the ideology that has taken over Israel today.
And who thought, for whatever, like, biblical, scriptural reasons, that it was their land in the first place.
That it was their land and they had the right to take it and that they were superior. And it's not it's not an accident that Israel is the savior right now of the right wing. The militarists, the evangelicals, they love Israel because Israel represents the use of military force to expand your land and be a superior force. And that's the way the U.S., unfortunately, that's the way they're seen in the rest of the Middle East. It's sad that it seems like that many Jews, including the leadership of Israel, have learned the wrong lesson from the Holocaust. Not instead of never again for anyone, it's never again for us, so we'll make sure that nothing ever happens to us. And they pull out the Holocaust thing all the time when it really doesn't apply. And I began this discussion about the use of water because you can't justify taking most of the water as a security issue. You can argue the wall, you can argue checkpoints, I don't agree with that, but how do you argue that you get 90% of the water when you're 50% of the population and you get eight times as much water per person as they do?
Jeff, there is a conference coming up in the end of September in Albuquerque.
There is. It's September 28th and 29th at the Presbyterian Church on Carlisle. Wonderful speakers coming, Palestinian women and men, and Ali Abonima and Jeff Halper. And I really urge people to go down to Albuquerque for that conference.
And it's called the Sabil Conference?
Friends of Sabil. Sabil are Palestinian Christians, and they are sponsoring the conference, but it's very broad, and some of the best speakers in the country and from Israel-Palestine will be here to talk.
And the website for that conference is FOSNA, F-O-S-N-A, that's Friends of Sabil North America, FOSNA.org. Jeffrey Haas is a civil rights attorney, author, and human rights advocate, and he will be speaking tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation at 107 West Barcelona here in Santa Fe. And for more information, you can call 469-0714. The talk is going to be Jeff and Becca Wolf doing a talk called Demographic Engineering, Israeli Displacement of Palestinians from East Jerusalem and the West Bank. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.